League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
There is a darkness that lurks inside all of us. Time to bring it into the light. Welcome to Sick Minds with Alistair Griggs and Nico Tatarevich.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode something.
Eight.
Yeah. We're doing all right, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's okay. This is worth doing, isn't it? We're doing okay. Oh, episode eight of Sick Minds. And we've got a guest with us who I'm very excited about because I saw him doing a stand-up show. Fucking hell, it must be 3 years ago. But I'm going to assume you're still funny.
Yeah, well...
It's Chris Stokes, everyone.
Thanks
Chris
very much. Thank
Chris
you very
Stokes.
Much. Yeah, I'm glad you came to a good show.
I did come to
a good
show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the one after that was better, I thought, but not as many people saw it because there was a building
seen you
site.
By
there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a building site outside the venue which sort of affected people finding it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I haven't been since that one, but I'm going again this year.
Oh, yeah. You're doing an hour?
Yep. Yeah. You have to, don't you?
Do you?
I'd do half an hour if I could.
I did that once.
Did you?
The only time I ever did Edinburgh was really weird. It was like, okay, so I want to know what this Edinburgh thing is, but I don't want to quite commit to saying, hey, guys, this is me doing what I do at my best. So I'd heard vaguely that on the Free Fringe, there are some people doing work in progress stuff. You get to have a knockabout, you get some ideas, and you come back the next year fully formed.
Yeah.
But what I hadn't accounted for was the fact that, it was my first time when I was 40 or 41 or something.
Right.
And secondly, that going to do something every day that isn't very good or worked out with the pressure of, is anyone going to turn up, and the relentlessness of the gigging and the flyering, which is something that I had never in my life thought that I would be handing out pieces of paper trying to make people like me or come and watch me. I've always thought I was vain and narcissistic and all that sort of thing. And I learned up there that I really simply didn't care if anybody
really came
and looked at my face.
It
was fucking dark, man.
Oof. It can depend what room you're in as well, which venue.
The wettest one, where the caves are somewhere.
I saw that and it was painful venue. You were good, but it was sort of horrible.
Wow, I wonder where that was going.
I showed you
an opportunity
with the right there.
You had an opportunity to crush me there, didn't you?
Was it actually in the caves, or was it the one up the street opposite? Was it like Banshee Labyrinth?
Oh, right, no, yeah. Down at the bottom, you cross the road.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the one where it's literally like wet dripping off the walls. And it was when one of the promoters had fucked up and everyone had to be hastily rehoused in...
Oh.
So it was bad.
Oh, that was the... where there's a certain company had said that they had one of the venues they totally didn't.
Absolutely. And I was just... I mean, I enjoyed the... Overall, I look back quite fondly on it, but I came back from that month away, really.
Can I suggest that you didn't have the best of circumstances?
It's nice to hear that, because I knew that was happening.
Right.
But creatively... It was like I did work on a character that went down all right and everything. It was like a football hooligan called Paul the Shark, and it had potential. But it's like I came back from that festival and I sort of just crawled into my bed with all the curtains shut. I think I stayed in my room for about a month just thinking, no, oh God, I found out exactly how old I am and how lazy I am. And I just took the whole thing quite negatively. And the best bit of creative I got out of it was when I went around on my day off filming loads of bits and bobs, and then I wrote like a cover version of Lessons in Love by Level 42 as a little nod to a post that Alex Lowe had put up when he met Mark King. And I made this kind of broody, slow Johnny Cash-esque sort of little pop video, and it felt like a really fun, lovely, soulful thing to do, but I put it up and it just made everyone think, oh, Jesus Christ, what's happened to him?
Fringe meltdowns are the best.
Yeah.
There are, like, at least one person has one each year.
All I could think the whole time I was there was, I want to eat my dinner. I want to eat my dinner in a room. I want to be in a room. And it's such a weird thing. It might have been, you know, if I ever did it again.
There are rooms in Edinburgh. Yeah.
There were rooms, but it was a room with a microphone in it and some seats and wet walls.
Were you on at dinner time?
No, it was. I think it might have been 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
But anyway.
I struggle to think why the dinner thing was playing on your mind so much when you could go and have dinner.
It just meant I had to be out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I came face to face with the reality that I'm a man that likes to be at home to eat his tea.
Yeah.
Imagine that being what you learn from doing a comedy festival.
That's the biggest lesson. your biggest takeaway from the world's biggest arts festival.
Exactly. Just like I prefer cooking.
Yeah.
Griggs, you came to see me, didn't you? What was your reading of my state of mind at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were good, but there was this... It's when you talked about the fly ring, there was a real sense of...
I didn't know I was going to have to do that, and that sounds terrible, and there's nothing wrong with doing it, and it's completely fucking admirable that people will sell the arse out of their show. Paul Curry had the best attitude to that I've ever seen in my life, right? A Northern Irish comic called Paul Curry, who at the time, he looked like early Kings of Leon with his big hair and his beard and his suits. Really, really amazing physically funny act. And he would be there every day, dressed in his gear from quite early on, with a shopping trolley, going around charming people, chatting people up. And his show is packed every night. It's fucking. I was like, where do you get that drive? Where do you get that? I mean, I'm not going to say, like, where do you get that, like, desperation to do it? Because it was like, he was fucking doing what he's good at, man. And it really made me question what was missing from my makeup that I wasn't enjoying that process of drumming up the business.
Yeah, the thing with flyering is that I hate it. Mm. I know it has to happen, but I don't whenever I do a gig, I don't even like being seen before I go on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like the first time an audience sees you should be as you walk out.
Like Neil Diamond.
So it's like the start of the show. But if the people that are there have like met you earlier in the day and you've been like, please come because I need people to come and see me.
Yeah.
It kind of like, how do you then sort of like have any status?
I understand that. Like even like out in like the courtyard, say, the Pleasance courtyard in Edinburgh, someone sees you eating like a burger.
And you've dripped
sort of wiping it off while you go up the stairs. It kind of ruins the magic.
Or you trip up on the cobbles.
Yeah. And spill all your jokes on the floor, and then people are like walking on your jokes. Oh, God, we're just...
Look at that silly man. Look at that silly man with his
dreams. When I first started, I was doing like a 5-minute open spot at a gig, and it was one of those where they put two new acts on in the middle, and the one on before me I was new, so I hadn't really sort of like got over the nerves of being on stage, but also like the idea of linking everything together. I used to write my set on my hand, and so did the open spot before me.
Mm.
And there was a break between us, and as I was in the gents, the bloke next to me at the urinal said, "Did you see the last act? He had his jokes written all on his hand."
Yeah, the
cunt. I was like, "Oh no!" So I went and washed them off.
Oh, you washed your jokes away.
I washed my jokes away, and then at one point, forgot what came next and had to level with the crowd. Ooh. But that becomes like a.
But then they liked it.
It became funny.
I felt like you were very confident in front of an audience. I think you can handle a change in direction, you're not going to like dry up. But I mean, this is such a boring question to ask a comedian. But you know, have you ever properly like just gone fucking blank?
As in forgetting things?
Yeah, just not had anything. Like you got nothing.
Yeah. The year that you came, actually.
the day that you came, stared into you.
The first show of that run. It was that show. For the context of it, I don't know whether you remember it. It was both my post breakup and post breakdown show.
Right, it was. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I'd quit comedy.
I
was driving a van for an animal charity, and then I was, which was insane because I would like look. I was
That's
obviously
right.
This is a podcast, so you can't see me, but I'm not the sort of person that should move furniture by himself. I was having to do that because I wasn't ferrying animals around. I was doing deliveries from charity shops or picking donations up and taking them to the shop, and it would always be like little old ladies that wanted their sofa taken or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember once having to move a sofa by myself, and because of permit parking, having to park at the end of the street and then having to move this sofa and dragging it and cartwheeling it all by myself. And then at the end of it, I managed to get it in, and the old lady gave me £2. And she said, "That's for sweets." So it was sort of like, but the thing is that I thought I was sort of like enjoying it, I suppose, because I was like, it was nice to have. I don't know whether like you ever miss a routine, like a 9 to 5. It was just nice starting a working day, finishing day. And then I didn't realize how nice it was just having hours off, sort of like, I'm not working now, I'm off the clock.
But then did you then get sick of it and wanted to come back?
No, what happened was I got offered some stand up work by somebody that didn't know I'd quit.
And we need you back.
It was sort of like, it was like,
I don't do that anymore.
But did you almost do it out of like, you didn't want to embarrass them into having to tell them?
No, I had to have like genuinely think about it. But it was, like once you know, I get out and they drag me right back in. But
you're chopping wood in the forest, and I came
as soon as I get out of here.
But it was a stupid thing, like, because I genuinely gave it. So I thought, I might say no, and I might just keep driving the van. And then I told people, like friends, about what it was, and they were like, "You idiot! You should do it." So I quit the job. In, I think it was about March, and then to do this tour, and then because I'd sort of like come back to it, I was like, I should probably get an agent now. So I just sort of like asked my first choice. I was really cheeky, and they went, "Yeah, come in for a meeting." And I was like, "Oh, is this easy now?" I didn't realise how you could ask for things. It was like an epiphany. And then I was like, this was the end of March, and I was like, "Oh, I could do Edinburgh now. That's really pushing it close."
Yeah.
So I emailed the Pleasants to see if they had any rooms left, and they said yeah, but the whole show had to get put together really, really last minute. So when it came to the first night of the run, I hadn't really done enough previews, and there was about like 8 people there that first night. 2 of them were reviewers.
The 8 was a good night when I was.
two of them were reviewers, and it was about halfway through where I went, I don't know what comes next. And I could throw a bit of old in, but I've got this block where I was like, no, this is supposed to be a new show. Don't rely on any of the old stuff. Just sort of like put yourself under pressure to remember what comes next. But I had to just say,
I've not done a lot of stand-up. I did a bit over the years, sometimes in character, sometimes just trying stuff out. I never really got momentum going behind any of it. But I've definitely earned the stripe of completely fucking dying on your ass, and then you know, and then the next day thinking, "Fuck me, I survived that." I was quite proud of myself that I'd done something so terrible. And what it was I was at a gig. There's in Stratford, there's a Theatre Royale or something.
Oh yeah,
and there's like a bar room downstairs there, and they had new people on. Like I think it was probably open mic actually, and I got up there and I was doing stuff that I'd done, I don't know, five or six times already. And we're starting to think, oh, this can work. You can stand and say this stuff, and it kind of works if you keep the pretense up, if you like, you know, that you're fine. And but somewhere down the line, it was like, you know, there's like bright lights, so therefore you can't even really see the people. It's just you can just see a light in your face, and you're talking and hoping that people are laughing. And then my brain just completely emptied like a fucking sieve, completely went. And my mate David, who used to write sort of TV comedy with David Kajinubi, he'd come with me, and I knew that he was at the bar over there, leaning on the bar, and I dried up, and I'm sure it was only about 5 to 10 seconds,
but it was so much longer.
It felt like a very long time, and the only word that was in my brain was I just leaned into the mic and just went, "David." and I sort of located him, and he was just like clutching his forehead, like, oh my, like seeing this human being degrade himself like that.
And have to ask for his mate.
Yeah.
That's
weird. Who can't do anything.
Yeah, but
like, what was he supposed to say in that situation? Like, what, mate?
Mum.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I'm going to say next? Mommy.
If you ever get into any trouble, like, when do you ever go, like, Steve?
Steve?
I did it once.
Really?
And, it was so bad. I think it almost gave me a form of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I came on and I said some things which I thought were funny, and they disagreed badly.
Which is their right.
Like, yeah. But and then I was just amazed at the fact that 5 minutes, as you said, could go on an eternity.
Yeah.
And it was nothing. It was a few like titters. I remember, and then I ended, and I sort of walked away. And I was so freaked out that I got on the wrong train home. And I mean, an hour away, as in I was in a completely different village, and I was like, where the hell am I? I'm in Gordon Hill. Why am I in Gordon Hill? And I had to get out, and I spent, it was like the 48 hours. I kept on having like, going, oh God, like flashbacks to the sort of horror of it.
It's so intense.
Oh God. Yeah. And
that's why I honestly
desired to go do it again. I was
really
like,
that. Really,
it was just like it was almost. I remember as I left, as I walked out, and I almost got on that train. There was a feeling of like, okay, I'm glad I've done that, and I'm actually not going to do that. I'm going to leave that there.
Yeah.
That's forever. No,
it's interesting because most of us have had a gig like that, and something compels us to carry on. And I don't right.
I remember the first time I ever did it. I had a mate come with me. I had it all planned out what I was going to say, written on the hand, bullet points on the hand, but about 30 seconds into it, it was the Coach and Horses on Great Marlborough Street, and some twat shouted something out, and for whatever reason, I was feeling sharp enough that I jumped on the comment, and then made light of that they'd throw me off and got on with it, and I just went off on one, and the fucking tore the roof off.
Yeah.
And like 5 minute slot, basically didn't get to say anything that I thought was going to say, but managed to make this small room of people laugh.
Yeah.
And then it was like time's up. And I left going, what have I been worried about?
Yeah.
I can basically do stand up.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
Not a problem. So then another gig was arranged in Richmond on a Sunday night. And my mate came with me again, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to really write anything down. I'm just going to be myself like the other night when I completely fucking smashed it. And I walked out in front of this audience and just was like, God, I mean, yeah. Just, oh, you're here. This is the pub. This is comedy. God, what am I saying? I don't even know what I'm saying. Oh. And it just went on like that while people shrank into their seats. And, yeah, I mean, I didn't end up doing loads of stand-up, but I find it quite exhilarating doing something so stupid and getting it so wrong. And then I quite like having my ego punctured, because I know that there are times when your ego is helping you be a twat.
Right.
I don't mind admitting that I'm a twat.
It can keep
sometimes.
It can definitely keep you in check when you think of it like that. I hadn't really thought of it.
How do you feel about admitting that you're a twat, Griggs?
I'm a twat.
No, but I mean, you know, I just mean in the way that we're all.
What do you mean?
How do you feel about your ego? Do you think you've got one? Well, obviously you've got one, but you know,
it's really been crushed, mostly by you.
Mostly by me. Yeah,
you really do play with it.
Yeah, I play with it like a little sort of silly little toy. To me, your ego to me is like a little McDonald's toy.
It snaps out and it attacks others. That's why it's quite fragile, isn't it?
It stays really well hidden, but when it comes out, it really bears its teeth.
I do.
Go on.
I bear your teeth. I bear my teeth to you sometimes, don't I?
Yeah, it's quite amusing.
When I get angry.
When have you done that? Do you want to say about that?
Well, that was when you were talking about your relationship, and you were admonishing mine.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I couldn't believe that you had the audacity, frankly, that you were sort of like lecturing
me. He was biting his lip like someone
lecturing me,
like a family on Christmas Day that's got a big fucking issue that's never been. He's just sitting there broiling, and I was watching him.
Just pontificating on your like as if, and then,
So he came at me.
Yeah, and what did I say?
Well, we won't go there.
Yeah.
But I think I pushed you against the wall, shouted into your face once.
Yeah.
But not like we ever get like aggressive like that, because it's always underpinned by like we've got an agreement between us to be each other's tormentors, but it's through
massively unequal.
I'd love to torment you more. Yeah, but you can't because I'm more developed than you.
No. This is the thing.
What thing?
I have nukes. You're like firing these little things, and you hurt me. You're like, and I'm like going, I refuse out of kindness I could fire a nuclear missile and devastate you.
My take on it.
Destroy you.
But my take on it. My take on it is, you think you've got nukes, but because I actually am brave enough to open up my own head and sort of take responsibility for flaws and whatever, and do therapy and all that stuff, that your nukes would basically just bounce off my force field. Because you'd be like, why isn't he dying? It's like, it's because I know I'm flawed. It's all right. It's fine.
Oh, don't and that, and try you hate that. Win everything.
Just, you're saying you're immune to a nuclear attack.
Sort of, yeah.
From that's, me. That's an ego right there. Well,
yeah. No, it isn't really, is it? Because have you seen Black Panther?
Yes, I have, yeah.
You know that force field they put up and then all the sort of that's murdery fictional. Goblins can't get in it?
Yeah.
I've only got that when it comes to dealing with him. I haven't got that in the world. It's just a beautiful discovery that I've made in my life that I finally met one person that that I have absolute control over. I'm just winding him up. Chris, you are a vegan or a vegetarian?
Vegan.
How's that working out?
Fine. Been vegan for 10 years.
Do you eat coconut bacon?
I have tried coconut bacon.
That's the one thing.
It's a hassle to.
Yeah, like, to but can't you just buy it? Like,
you could buy it, yeah, for like I think like 200 grams for about as many quid. But like, it's. Like,
I just remember from listening to your show that you know you obviously got a deep love of animals, and that brings that brings you. This is where you and Griggs might differ because I remember you once saying to me, "Compared to animals, I am a god."
Yeah,
that's something you actually said out to me. What did you mean by that?
I just feel lots of people kind of, you know, they're very cute with them. I like dogs and stuff, but there's no doubt in my mind that I look at them and they're morons. I mean, have complete dominion over all creatures.
You are imposing your like a lot of criteria on them that they're not even like aware of. The concept of a god, so they don't see you as a god, which is what makes you a god. They see you as a fellow thing.
But
they're nicer than
them. Well, I mean, like, no. I mean, like, you're cleverer than them, but that's by default. Everybody's got to understand that we are the top of the food... Well, not even the top of the food chain. We've managed to leave
beef,
the food chain.
Beef is the top of the food chain, isn't it?
But if you... Really? Like, we have got, like... Got to the point where we're the most intelligent species on the planet. It's given us a sense of arrogance. Yeah. It's only... We only...
Too right.
We only just happen to be winning the evolutionary race at this certain... point.
Would you like to think that something catches us up, and what would you like it to be?
I've been thinking about this a lot. I had this idea for a sitcom where sharks have become like as clever as us.
Yeah.
Which is a really sort of like that throws the power balance because I mean they can't get us because we'll just stay out of the water.
Yeah.
But like so.
So not that clever. Yeah,
no.
We've invented submarines. What have they done? I'm sort of imagining what you'd be thinking.
But at this point, this is.
I'm just thinking we just kill them all.
Kill the sharks.
We just kill them before.
We already are, aren't we?
No, but even if they showed any sign of intelligence, we could just, like, you know, drop a bomb in there.
What if they were so clever that they hid how clever they are from us? And we've bought the myth that they're sea creatures, and then we wake up one day and we're all being throttled in our beds by sharks who've made. Under the sea, that's like arms think, to strangle us with.
I was going to say, you'd think that the way the shark would kill you by strangling.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, in a bedroom.
Sorry.
I mean, obviously, if I'm in your environment, by all means, just chew my leg off.
Right.
But if a shark wandered into my bedroom and tried to take me on, scared as I'd be, I'd immediately think, you're on my manor here, mate.
You know when they're in water? You know, so like we have a scuba gear, so we put a mask over our mouth, so our mouths are rendered useless underwater.
Yeah.
They breathe through their gills.
Yes.
So they could just sort of like put something there on their gills.
So they just need a gill mask.
Yeah, so they can keep breathing on land, and then they're just...
It's still quite a difficult... Like my flat, you come in the front door, so it's about 20 metres... Well, not 20 metres, it's about 4 metres up the corridor. Mm. I'm having a nap. You've got to get the door open...
Yeah, I mean, like, our houses are too small for sharks.
It's just not going to happen there. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well,
sick minds.
Sometimes I do feel like, how can we not just scream? Mm, how can we not... How can you not just... I was on the train, and I heard... I was sitting next to a man just going into work, and he was on his laptop or something, and he turned towards the window, and I heard him just quietly say to himself, "Oh, God." And I didn't know what it was about, but in a way it felt like it was a kind of like call for the time. It was almost like he was sort of summing it. He just went, oh God. And
it sounds like that moment that often people will have on a plane. Mm. And they go, "What the fuck are we doing up here in this thing?" Mm. and like, you know, fear of flying, you know, I've felt it a little bit. I don't suffer from it myself, but it's weird because you really could have that same feeling anywhere. Like, I find, you know, watching ITV or like in say somewhere like Subway. Yeah. Oh god. Yeah. Like, look at this. Everything about this is synthetic, even though it's food.
But it's the contradiction that starts to piss me off, because everybody kind of knows that, and yet they will use nature as an excuse for our behaviour. And it's like, look, like, come on, you can't use nature as an excuse anymore. We've transcended that, surely. Mm. Like this idea that we have to kill and eat animals because it's natural. It's what lions would do. It's like, well, we're not lions. And you know, if you want to sort of like adhere to that, you should go and dump your iPhone and shit outside.
So that's annoying.
Yeah, I know.
That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
It's inconvenient.
But I wish people would own that contradiction.
Are we the laziest?
Go, like, I have more respect for somebody that tells me, oh, I just like the taste of it, than, oh, no, but we're meant to and we have to.
That's why we've got these teeth.
Yeah.
That's why we've got Plus those teeth. That one's for broccoli and that one's for chops.
Yeah. Well, that teeth is actually for probably something like bamboo, to be honest, because look at a gorilla. I mean, gorilla's entirely vegetarian. Are you saying that they've got
So that's like a hipster tooth.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
The bamboo tooth. Like, oh, yeah, I'm really into bamboo at the moment. Have you been to bamboo? Have you been to lobster and bamboo?
Lobster and bamboo sounds like something that would appeal to everybody. You know, you've got the people that would eat lobster, and then you've got the people that would be like, imagine, I don't want to eat lobster.
Imagine a world, Chris, where we could sit side by side with pandas enjoying the same food. Do you think pandas would like lobster? Or are they herbivores, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or just bambooivores? Is it just bamboo?
I don't know, actually.
I love the word. I've decided that you're basically Terry
Nixon.
Just because I once I heard you do some stand-up where you drove a van for an animal charity. It's like, they'll be ringing him up like, yeah, Chris, just been thinking about these gazelles. Does the food break down in the stomach, or saliva-based?
Aren't animals sort of like mostly opportunistic? So, like a panda would never have probably met a lobster. So maybe it would try to eat it if you put a lobster in front of it. And then it might go, oh, it's not for me, I'm a panda, I forgot. Or whether it would just sort of like go, oh, that's all right. But the reason that we think that pandas are vegetarian is because that is the only thing available to them.
I think they'd be like, this is a bit fussy. And how much?
I imagine.
How much?
I imagine.
Fucking lobster.
I have to pick it out. I'll have that one. I think the thing about... like this idea, they're omnivores, aren't they, in the same way that we are? Because people say, oh, no, humans are carnivores. We're not. We're omnivores. We can eat it, but we don't have to. Mm. And the same with pigs and dogs. And I imagine pandas might be able to digest meat. Probably give them an upset tummy the first time they have it.
But see, you look really good on it. Like, you know, I'm assuming you have a healthy diet, because you can say, when someone says they're vegetarian or vegan, you sort of think... you must be super healthy, but you could also just be eating Pop-Tarts all the time.
One of my favourite things is when somebody goes, oh, I haven't seen for a while, we'll start with, oh, you're looking well. And I go, oh, thanks very much, because that's what happens in conversation. And then about half an hour into it, my veganism will come up because we've gone somewhere to eat or whatever. And then they'll go, oh, I've said he looks really well. I can't.
I find it interesting that pandas are quite tubby, aren't they?
Yeah,
off bamboo.
Yeah, so are gorillas. Gorillas are not skinny, are they? And they're vegetarian.
My childish mind just immediately jumped to the idea that gorillas just eat bananas. But that's just, is that just in cartoons?
It's racist,
is it, against gorillas? But you know, the mentioning of bananas in their own, you know, in the context of food isn't racist. Alistair.
Oh god.
It's when a banana is thrown by a member of an EDL supporter that bananas become the horrible symbol that they can be. It's all right. What do you want
to
do now?
Having said that, I try to eat a banana in secret, not because of racist connotations, just because it always looks like phallic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It's embarrassing when you're eating a banana.
Never look someone in the eye when you're eating a banana. Mm.
And never look somebody in the eye when you're eating anything, I find. Yeah. It's just a weird thing to do.
Unless it's like a trial on like a game show or something, and it's like, or Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah,
that's one time.
Having said that, they did not know they had the same strand of spaghetti. That was just a happy accident, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't
to
it?
Start with, they were looking away.
That would never... Imagine if they'd have ordered penne, that just... Whole relationship wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Sort of been like when Harry met Sally, but with dogs.
Also, it's really It's really weird that that chef gave such nice food away to two stray dogs in the alley.
And he also, there was a sense that...
And it was Italian, so it's probably got riddled with onion and garlic, which are, you know, poisonous to dogs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my ex-partner's dog will go all gibbery and weird, and it's not nice, and you have to take her to the vets. If she gets hold of, like, she pulls a tray off the top that's had a roast in it and gives it a lick, that's not a fun day after that.
Have you ever smelt dog vomit?
Yeah.
I can't believe how bad that smells.
Yeah, I know.
Have you looked after like a lot of sort of animals? And
I've got a dog at the moment, and then who I rescued from Serbia, and then I.
Wow, it's quite a dramatic story.
Yeah, I know. It was. I didn't go out there. Yeah. And then there's a charity that bring them over because they're street dogs, and like they just get put in kill shelters even if they're young and healthy. So I rescued my dog from that charity, and then occasionally we will foster as another dog from Serbia.
Really?
Until it finds, temporarily? And yeah, until it finds like a permanent home.
I'm craving a dog at the moment. I don't mean like...
To eat.
I mean like, you know, as a little buddy. We all need a friend, don't we, Alistair?
Yeah.
I'm your friend. You know that, don't you?
Yes, I know you're my friend.
It's part of the frustration you've got that you think he sees you as a dog.
I am his dog. Yeah. He's done it. Mm. It's always just a little look.
I would look after a dog. Absolutely, completely.
And I think I think it sticks in your craw because you already said that you feel like you've got dominion over all animals.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're seen as one probably upsets you.
You're more of a terrapin, like in a little jar
vivarium
that I kind of stare at and go, oh, look at it. Look at it. Drop something in there to see whether it shuffles about a little bit.
And you bang the glass. It really hurts my ears.
It's like, ah! Oh, it isn't that bad, Alistair. We'll get through it.
Sick Minds.
So we're going to play a new version of an item that we've been doing over the last few weeks that last week just... died in flames.
Yeah.
Did it or did it not?
Well, I wanted it to be better than it was, but Nico's convinced me to let it die.
It's dying.
Because he's, you know,
because there might
everything.
Be another way of doing it. Hey, we can progress together.
Okay, yeah.
So, we would like you to play You Shouldn't Laugh.
Should we do that again?
Right, so, what? Do it again.
Because I didn't say it.
Oh, do you want to do it with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3... You shouldn't laugh.
Nice.
Right, the way this used to work is that we read out tawdry headlines that are horrible and someone would either giggle guiltily or not, and it was like a penalty shootout. But it had the atmosphere. It had the atmosphere of a W.H. Smith. Didn't it? But it was funny. It was shit but funny. But then it's like we did it 7 times. So I've decided that this can be rethought
by the atmosphere of a W.H. Smith. Exactly. What you mean.
I wish we had more time to actually describe in detail the atmosphere in a W.H. Smith, because it is one of quiet desperation, I would have said.
Yeah, I think people go in there and then realise they can get everything elsewhere cheaper.
It's hot.
Without being sort of manipulated into buying chocolate for a pound.
Yeah, £2.49 for a bottle of water. Are you insane?
Yeah, bastards. Right, now, the thing with this new version of You Shouldn't Laugh is that I need you to meet someone who lives under the bowels of the studio that is called the Imp of the Mind.
Oh, okay.
And he's basically a living and breathing analogy for the evil that resides in all of our brains.
He's doing well if he lives in Zone 1.
Is in himself the worst part of... Where are we? We're in Victoria, by the way, listeners. That was a London Tube map joke, straight from the horse's mouth. So, would you just follow me down these stairs? You know, it all will become clear.
Yeah, hang on.
Just open the door. Right, hang on a minute. Okay. Imp, dear Imp, may I please have your attention?
Yes.
I've got a suggestion to include you in the show in a slightly more fruitful way. I wonder if you'd be willing to play along, Your Majesty.
You want me to help you with a format?
I want some help with an ailing format, yes. I've brought with me this week's guest. He's called Chris Stokes. He's a comedian.
Hello, Chris.
All right.
What it is, Imp, is you shouldn't laugh. Is the item, and I just want you to read out this piece of journalism from the Daily Mirror,
okay.
which I found very funny, even though it's horrible, and I want to see whether it has the same effect on Chris or not. So, in your own time, please.
Osama bin Laden plotted to kill the England team in a brutal, bloody, and audacious attack during the 1998 World Cup in France. The plan during a game with Tunisia was to blow up David Seaman with a suicide bomber, throw a grenade at Glenn Hoddle before storming the pitch to shoot Alan Shearer. David Beckham and Michael Owen were also to die. The revelation was made by Adam Robinson, a journalist based in the Middle East, and Yusef Budansky, who served as director of the US Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. They claimed... Shall I continue?
I don't know, but if you want to...
I'll give it a go. They claimed during the mid-1990s, bin Laden bought a property in Wembley to embark on a fact-finding mission. In his book, Terror on the Pitch, Robinson quotes a document from fellow Al-Qaeda conspirator Ahmed Zuri in 1997 about bin Laden, named Sheikh. It read, "We suggested the point man should make his way to Seaman and blow himself up. Bin Laden was killed by US Special Forces in May 2011.
The end.
Wow.
Oh, thank you, Imp.
Thank you.
It's lovely to hear you get a bit of rhythm going there.
I was into that. That was very
interesting. I think that it's really the first bit that's funny, but that isn't your fault. That's my fault for literally just handing you something to read out. Well, you laughed.
And
what we're not doing anymore, listeners, is keeping some sort of score. This isn't about competition, is it, Alistair?
No, it's absolutely not.
Hold my hand.
Yeah.
It's all
okay.
Right. We're all right. On the same side.
All right.
Well done. So, with that in mind, it now falls to the Imp to judge whether or not you, Chris Stokes, have a sick mind. How do you feel about him, Imp? Is it all right to ask you that?
Yes, it is. I'm thinking Chris Stokes... Yes, you indeed do have a sick mind. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
That's very good. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Just follow us back up the stairs.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, that was interesting. It surprised me that he thought that
why
you
have
a sick
tutu?
Mind. I don't know. I think it's a power play.
Right.
I think it's a power play.
It was that I was laughing at, rather than the story.
did he part his legs slightly?
A little bit, yeah. In a coquettish fashion,
exactly.
Like as if he didn't mean to do it, but he definitely did. Definitely.
Aren't people complex?
It's strange, isn't it?
Aren't they? Well, Chris, it's been wonderful to have you on here on Sick Minds. Is there anything you'd like to tell the audience about where they can catch you, see you, follow you? Any of that stuff, bearing in mind this might not be broadcast for a few weeks.
Whether it's broadcast in a few weeks or not, I'm on Twitter in the same place, which is _Chris_Stokes, because I had to do that because there's a several other Chris Stokeses, including an alleged child molester, and it's very important that I distance myself from him. Yeah. People still find me, though, when they're looking for him.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Alistair, would you like to tell your fans how to reach you, or your detractors?
My fans can reach me at Alistair Griggs on Twitter.
And I can be found at Nicotatz, NICOTATZ, on Twitter, which I just sign in occasionally and look and just hate myself for even looking. I think it's literally... a driver of hatred and bile in the world. But please, feel free.
Yeah, all right.
To direct some of it to you.
To try and tug on my sleeve. Anyway, I love doing Sick Minds, and it's been wonderful talking to you, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
And you, Alistair.
Thank
Never
you.
Forget that. None of this would happen if I didn't care about you in some way.
Please.
Shut up. Just stop talking. Thank you for joining us on...
Sick Minds.
Sick Minds.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.